All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Vander Veen and Company. We've got a fantastic show on WWDB Talk 860. Michael, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Joe. Nice to see you.
It's my pleasure. We've got a great guest on the broadcast. I just want to make sure I don't get mixed up. You know, this is...
It's been a while since I've been in the guest chair.
Yeah, it has. And it's interesting because this is the first time that Michael Sonny Banks is your guest.
That's correct.
You've been on the show many times, so it's great to have him, have Sonny here.
I see us as a tripod because you're the equation in the middle of these shows.
That's right.
I like that. I love that.
Here I am. And
and listen, I appreciate the invite. It's nice to be here.
Well, yeah, great to have you, Sonny.
Yeah, and certainly lots to talk about. Sonny Banks, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Joe.
It certainly is cool to be here at the offices of Vander Veen and Associates. I just roll with that.
Vander Veen, Hartshorne, and Levin.
Right.
Yeah, I was commenting to the receptionist how good of a job she does with that name. I'm like, wow.
Right. Well, can I?
She needs more pay.
Right.
Well, no, she does.
Can she's we get the, her in here right now?
She does. I'll tell you, in all seriousness, Erica is the best receptionist.
She's incredible.
In all of Philadelphia.
Yeah. She very pleasant, Mike.
Very. The way she holds the client, oh, she hugs God, the she's client. Incredible. She cares about the clients. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The people come just to sit particularly in the winter when the fire's going,
right,
and talk to Erica and just to talk to her and feel safe and like, wow, you know, normal.
You're lucky.
She is really great. Lucky. And certainly.
And she does get raises.
Yeah. So having said that, we're going to remind our listeners about the firms right now. Anybody in the Delaware Valley who hasn't been hiding under a rock on a desert island knows both attorneys and firms. But let's do that. We're going to talk some law, you know, obviously about the practices during the broadcast, but we're going to get into some current events and a lot of stuff going on around this country.
Absolutely.
Michael, remind the listeners a little bit about, you know, the firm.
Vander Veen, Hartshorne, and Levin. We're 12 lawyers. We do a broad range of litigation. I think we set our motto to be we excel in the areas most important to you, most critical to you and your family. You know, so we're handling injury cases when people are injured. If anybody's injured at work, we send them to Sonny. We're doing criminal cases, domestic relations divorce, and we represent a lot of small businesses, mm-hmm, a lot of family businesses, and do a lot of commercial litigation for that size company.
And a ton of high-profile cases that we're going to get into. Sonny Banks, remind our listeners.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to do Pennsylvania workers' compensation practice, Social Security disability, both SSD and SSI, veterans benefits, and long-term disability cases.
The best. When nobody else can get it done, see Sonny.
That's right.
Was I close on that?
Well, I
did I pay you enough to say that before
No, man. Let me say, because he's modest and he's elegant and he's classy and he's hip and he's cutting edge and all of that. But, man, for a law firm, for an injured worker, for somebody who needs somebody fighting for them and going hard at it, Sonny Banks and his law firm are that for workers' comp and for Social Security disability, really changing people's lives, really doing meaningful things and making sure that people's lives, you know, get back on even keel, on track, and really helps people move forward. It's a great law firm.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. I mean, I think one of our goals is, to have passion. In order to, do the best for the client, I think you need to be passionate about their case.
Yeah.
You need to treat the case as if it was your own, and that's what we tried to do.
And both of us, when you talk about the culture of your firms, your firms are an extension of who you are.
True.
Except for Drew and this guy right here. but having said that, you know, and that's fantastic.
To the point where I'm anal about what goes on in the office.
Absolutely. But you know what's interesting?
Hard not to micromanage.
Right. It is. It really
when you
is.
Go into your firms, and Mike, I said this to you when we first started the show, first time I came here, it was, you know, the pandemic was still right in, you know, happening, and it hadn't ended. But in here, it was people were hitting it and getting it. It was excitement and electricity happening. And we do the shows at Banks Law, same thing there. But I have been places, many places, where it's like a ghost town, and the energy isn't there. You've maintained, that spark. And the team, I mean, throughout the whole...
I don't know what it is about the walls of this building, but there is a vibe through this building that one is unity to everybody working under this building. There's total...
You can certainly feel it when you walk in.
Yeah, and then just like the work ethic, the hustle, the pace, we have 3 flights of stairs, and they're gorgeous. They're the Tiger Oak, and there's carvings all around them, and we fully restored them, I mean, with love. But people don't walk up those stairs. They're trotting up there. They're racing up there. They're sprinting up there, and they're using it to keep their tempo going. And thanks for observing that, because it's really something that we want here. We feel it comes natural, and so we just try to capitalize on it.
Well, I have said it is interesting. Everybody's in pretty good shape here because they're up and down them stairs. Nobody's messing around.
They're not walking. They're running.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure, this is a beautiful building. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful building.
It really is.
And I'm sure that I could call my buddies at the elevator constructors, and they could put an elevator run on the back, but not necessary. Mm-hmm. Everybody stays in shape, man. up and down, and a lot of action, a lot of energy.
You got to tell me about those guys when we're off the air, because I actually need to put in handicap access right here in the back, and that's probably exactly what they would do, right? Put in some kind of a lift.
They can do that, yeah. In fact, you know what's funny about that? Yeah, they have a program called Lift a Vet. They have a program called Lift a Vet, where they actually put in lifts. They'll put in, ramps, elevators and all that. And a guy by the name of Ed Loomis used to be their business manager. Now, Joe Williams is a good friend of mine. Yep. I'll connect you. But having said that, they put the lifts in for the vets. Mm-hmm. And when we did several shows on, where we had the guys on. They do fundraisers every year and all that stuff. And one of the things that he said to me, Ed Loomis, because he was, they do the big boxing events and all kinds of stuff. And he said, one of our biggest fears is not having the money. Well, they'll raise the money. They'll do what they got to do, but it's not having the money to put them in for a disabled veteran who can't walk. And so, obviously.
That'd be a great company to work with, because we really need it here. We're literally 4 guys on a wheelchair and have to carry people who are wheelchair bound in and out of the building.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, listen.
And we accommodate everything once they're on the first floor. But, we got those 12 stairs coming in. It's an old place. So
It's Elevator Constructors Local 5. They'll they'll be able to direct that no problem.
Yeah, that's great.
So having said that.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're not. Listen. We're on a radio show, but anytime I can plug the Elevator Constructors, I do. And that charity, Lift a Vet. So having said that, lots going on in the world since we last did our broadcast. And, we've done many shows, lots going on with the gun violence in the city of Philadelphia. There's all kinds of messages on both sides. In other words, it gets political. But let me just say one thing on this. I have before we get into what's going on, I've always believed and always will believe in the right to bear arms, because drugs are illegal, but the bad guys seem to get them. However, I did a show, so we looked at, there's a bunch of different types of gun violence in this country. What's going on in Philly? Unbelievable. Now it hits South Street.
Yep.
Now it's in Oklahoma or in Texas and all those areas.
And what's sad about what happened on South Street, it turns out that was just a random shooting.
Yeah.
Something was going down, and I guess these guys that were involved were carrying, and they just decided to fire into the crowd.
One guy actually is not getting charged. He had a permit.
He did have a permit to carry.
Yeah, and it was a mistake, but he had it. But having said that, it's not just about we're not gonna we've had the pastors on the show, and we talked about gun control, and the pastor said to us directly, They ain't the guns that are committing the crimes. For the most part, the ghost guns and all those things. But having said that,
it's a very complicated issue.
Oh, my God.
You know, and, you know, so much gets involved there. Could the framers really foresee what was going to come, what society was going to be? Okay, we're here at 1219 Spruce Street in 1798. A guy named Shields bought this 12th and Spruce, bought this on speculation, thinking the city would grow off the river. This was a field, okay. At the time the Constitution, this 12th and Spruce was a field. It was speculation buying, and he put up a little, dug a hole, put up a one-room shack, and sold hay and wheat and horse supplies, made himself kind of a little outpost. So did the framers really understand that we were going to have millions of people living in tight spaces with really powerful, you know, semi-automatic weapons? I don't know if they could have thought of that. So, you know, when you, so when you're talking about, you know, strict constitutional interpretation, first of all, from a legal lawyer's perspective, it's a lawyer's show. When you're talking about strict constitutional interpretation, that's really what your very conservative judges, you know, the Scalia way of looking at stuff.
Absolutely.
You really got to question that, because, and for me, and I think for a lot of people, you know, I'm conflicted in how I'm conflicted with my beliefs of this Constitution, of natural law, of a lot of things that are bedrock to what runs our justice system and keeps our society civil, versus the reality we're faced with and living in these streets every day.
You know, you're looking
at the violence. So the question is, do we infringe on that right, that Second Amendment right, or are we going to be good enough to fix it another way?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be managed to some extent.
Yeah, what's the solution other than infringing on the right?
Well, let's think about
taking the right away.
How can you, first of all, in this world, and this is about as simple as you can get. If somebody wants to kill somebody, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. You can't stop them. Having said that, you know, there's a lot of, aside from, and we'll get to gun control, and discussions, because, you know, like you said, Mike,
it's interesting, Joe, how you phrase that. If somebody wants to kill someone, they can. I think the problem that that we're faced with is assault rifles.
No, I got it. What I'm saying is this, though. The kids today, make no mistake about this. This is not just drugs and gangs. Kids are fighting on Facebook.
Yeah.
About girls and going out. We've done shows where it's unexplainable. You wonder if education and hope, and Michael, you say it's a complicated issue. It is. In my opinion, it's a layered issue going around like there's no tomorrow. And so
we sitting here, we can probably agree on a couple of things. I mean, some ban or limit on assault rifles. I mean, do we need those?
Well, what I would say is this: you realize that an 18-year-old, at least in Texas, an 18-year-old can have a long gun, but not a handgun. And most of the kids that are killing people, killing the kids in schools, are right. under 21.
So if you look at the right of the people to have a well regulated militia and the right to bear arms, are they all arms? Can they have nuclear arms? Right?
Good question.
They can't have nuclear arms. Okay. Well, can they then have bombs like the rockets that come? You know, bazookas.
You can't have an automatic
weapon. Have bazookas. All right. Well, then assault rifles. Can should you be able to just take out 150 in 3 seconds? No, you shouldn't be allowed to have those either, probably, you know.
Right.
Can you be if you're going to stick to the framers' intent, right, mm-hmm. can you be a well-regulated militia and have your right to bear arms, but limit the type of arm or quantity of arm? You can be well-regulated without an infinite number. I mean, in fact, if you look at countries as people, they're all trying to limit themselves. There's arms races versus treaties and non-proliferation, right? Well, it's the same thing in the streets of Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
It's the same street, same thing in the streets of Philadelphia. And what we got to do is we got to make common sense reforms in a much more drastic way than anybody is willing to
common
talk
sense.
About.
I think I was just going to say, the answer, if you look at everything, because I did a show the other day with a guy who's a gun attorney. It's his job when somebody gets denied a license for him. I mean, and he was a crackerjack. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, let's go to another extreme. What about somebody who has a gun in PA, the woman who's in PA, she's licensed, got everything to carry, everything. She goes to New York, she's got the gun, she gets pulled over and she's honest.
Right.
And she says, I have a gun here. I've write the, you know, all that. Oh, here's my paperwork. It's a 3-year mandatory minimum, 2 or 3. So what
That's
I'm saying
crazy.
Is, exactly. So the fact is, you look at the,
mandatory minimum in Philadelphia, you get out of those a lot.
Yeah. Well, my point is in this. So this is you, Michael, you said it's a complicated issue, mm-hmm. but common sense, in my opinion, like Mike, to me, I would sit there and say, look, got to be 21 to have a long gun in the state. If you can be, and they talk about, you can go, of course, you're 18 years old, you can enlist in the armed forces, but those guys are trained for 18.
So it sounds, Joe, like you're lobbying for some federal control as opposed to leaving in the hands of the
states. I don't know what
states.
I'm lobbying for, but I'm lobbying for common sense.
Right.
And I absolutely believe 100%. My wife and I bought a gun during the pandemic. I never even held a gun. I've still not shot that one. This one, that's in my thing.
You know, you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
If you buy a gun, you're supposed to learn how to use it.
I got to learn how to use it.
Go to the range.
I'm more worried about my wife using it on me, right? And there's the chances are way better, right? But, not that I'm a bad guy, but she's just got a bad temper.
I'm mad at your wife. You can't say that.
But my point is, I have believed just in a common sense way, when I look at it and I say, okay, drugs are illegal, but the bad guys get them. Now we're talking about guns that are not killing 25 people at once. Okay. And the guns that we're talking about, and some common sense adjustments. Okay. That could, and I don't know what they all are, but I'm sure they're out there. Like, the one I mentioned 5 minutes ago, but my point is imagine if you had criminals walking up the streets and they knew nobody in these nice people houses didn't have a weapon, right? Mm-hmm. Now they don't have anything to lose. They can go get them. I also don't think you should be able to outgun the police. When they come, you shouldn't be able to and kill 30 kids in a room. I don't know what the ages of the Columbine shootings are. I know the kid in Texas was...
Yeah, I think... They were under 18.
Right. Yeah, but
But
let's not confuse that, actually. That's almost a red herring because the kid in Columbine or the ones that are, doing these mass shootings, that's not the problem. In the city of Philadelphia, we're losing, seven on a weekend. That's not a mass shooting scenario. That's too many people in a city with too many guns and the people don't value human life. They have no value.
I was separating those issues. I agree with you there.
Okay.
They're two separate issues.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying more for our listeners, there's a real difference between the psychology of a mass shooter and even the difference between what are the solutions there, mm-hmm. right, to the everyday mass violence that has taken over our cities. And other parts of the country, not just our cities.
But the mass shootings are at least highlighting the issue. And it's forcing people to think about it and do something now as opposed to later.
Yeah, but there are different reasons and different solutions, I think, is the...
Well, they talked about the guy. Here's an interesting... So when you look at a lot of these solutions, a lot of these issues, okay, drugs and guns and all that. But when you look at the individual two or three people that are on Facebook with guns and all this hardware and they're, they're... They talk about bullying, for example. Somebody talked about that. I mean, there are solutions. When I say somebody wants to kill somebody, Sonny, what I mean is, if these individuals, if they're dead set on hurting people, whether they do it with a car or a gun, they're going to do it.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is, and it could be one person, it could be, and it's always the most defenseless people, our children. But I think, for example, one of the biggest problems, and it was on one of the paper, in one of the publications, is bullying, right? You get these kids that are bullied their whole life, right? That at the schools, you know, only have so many resources, right? And so that person turns up, and I wonder if it's a common, I wonder if it's a common trait that's publicized.
But why the change? I mean, I'm sure that, you know, you and I and people that we know were bullied growing up.
Yeah.
We didn't grab a gun. Now it seems that that's, you know, the weapon of choice.
Well, you know, copycat, I don't know. And maybe we lived in structured homes enough to know better than to do that. Some people, who knows?
It's a very deep answer there.
It's a deep answer.
I mean, there are, you know, the breakdown of the family issues. There's the breakdown of community and church issues. But the people's value system of life is different today than when it was when we were. Couple that with a proliferation of guns, you know, and you end up with all these killings. So part of the solution is, you know, kind of what these liberals are going after. And when I say these liberals, I mean, I'm pretty liberal in a lot of ways, so including myself. But, you know, there's not one ingredient to the problem or the solution. And
there's definitely not.
And you know, what I was really surprised about, and the reason why I'm trying to differentiate between the
Texas and the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because for us, in our everyday lives, the much bigger problem is the street violence that is going on every day. I go away for a weekend, I'll come back and there'll be 16 shot and 9 dead. And
right.
That's like common for a weekend. And that's a much bigger problem than a mass shooting in Texas. You know, that's kind of a wave and a copycat thing. And that, I think that'll wane out probably over time. But we have this much bigger problem. And so over this past week, you know, we had the shooting on South Street. Our region, we've never had a mass shooting here, thank God. And, you know, knock on wood, never had it. But what the media tried to do was label it a mass shooting. That wasn't a mass shooting. That was two guys shooting each other with a street and a proliferation of guns on the street and a couple others stopped popping off.
Right.
You know, that's a different event than one crazed guy going in after posting on Facebook for 3 days how he's going to shoot up the church or the school and then goes and does it. And so I think by mislabeling that, and they did it intentionally because it sells, it sold, mm-hmm. It got people watching, it got more national attention, right? That doesn't get such big attention if they don't label it mass shooting. It does nothing, though, for finding the solution to our everyday problem here of just death in our streets, killings in our streets.
Well, I also think that the fact that they so easily, in a crowd, chose that instead of like fisticuffs or something like that, they pulled out guns and started. I mean, one of the things about Philly, listen, I do my shows in Jenkintown on the weekends and I'm driving up,
611.
Right. And I'm driving through some pretty tough neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried about being held up or anything like that from under any circumstance. But I do worry about a stray bullet hitting me on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in other words, it's a random, you know, it could be random. And I can say that, you know, more people are getting killed, little kids in houses and stuff like that. And the fact that people are so willing to use guns, Sonny, you and I have talked to the pastors many times on the shows. And Pastor Damon Jones visits the kids at the prisons. Now, you're 18, 19 years old. You're in jail for the rest of your entire life. Okay. And you inevitably are going to see the light. Like, in other words, this guy. And then what do you do? You're going, oh, I get it now. But you've already wasted your entire life.
Absolutely.
So the mentality of and the willingness of using whatever gun you have.
Man, that breaks my heart.
I know.
Just think.
The stories that he shared with us on air are just incredible.
Heartbreak.
Yeah.
Yeah, heartbreak. And so, Mike, when you say that these are complicated issues, There are so many issues. So many companies.
Is it the accessibility of guns?
It starts off with the willingness to use it, okay? And using it, in my neighborhood in East Falls when I grew up, and it was a working class, but blue collar, but racial tension, okay? We lived, in an interracial neighborhood. It was a great environment, but at the same time, it was tense.
Right.
You know, especially in the early days.
And when you had issues, you fought. Maybe that's because you didn't have access to a gun.
Right. And that's possible. No question.
Yeah, crowbar was the weapon of choice.
Yeah, somebody would do something. Either way, the fact is the willingness, the access and the worst. But, like the pastor said, Sonny. When I said to him, when I talked about gun control, he looked at me I think the one thing you can't do here is nothing. So I'm in agreement absolutely there. Because there are certain common sense, like Michael says, but.
Sonny, I think you're right. I think it's access. It's the number of guns. And, now this whole ghost gun thing.
The
right.
ghost gun. The pastor said, he said, the guns that are legal, now don't get me wrong, they get stolen and there's a lot on the street. Mm-hmm. But the access and the ability to get these things, and the willingness to use it. I won't even touch mine for crying out loud.
Right.
I'm going to say that too loud because somebody is visiting me. But it's a problem, and it's certainly in a city.
You have the right because the framers wanted to protect the people from the government. They didn't trust government. They came from a king. They came from tyranny. And they thought that they always needed to be able to rise up mm-hmm. against the government. And that's still really true. That's still a concern. It should always be a concern of ours. Power is so corrupting, But you got to do it in a way that is smart and it has regulation. You can regulate
but
things.
We're a country of laws now. So we were then that were just creating them. But the fact of the matter is that a revolution put your butt in jail. Like, in other words, it's not as easy to uprise. But let me just... change it a little bit.
But we did have somewhat of an uprising on January the 6th.
No weapons. There was a shot. There was a shot from a security to out. But, there weren't really weapons there.
I don't think the participants were actually
The participants weren't. Weapons. There are very few of the now 600 or so that have been charged. A very small handful had a weapons charge of any kind. they were stashing them outside of D.C. There appears to be that kind of evidence.
What about what's going on right now? Three House Republicans say they're going to try to impeach Larry Krasner. We just had John McNesby on one of our shows, right? And John...
Larry, if you want a lawyer with experience in impeachments, give me a call.
Mike's volunteering.
I'll win that one too for you.
I love it.
Right. But my point is that we now have a situation where, of course, the police
the voters,
union
and voters voted Larry Krasner in.
Yeah.
The voters will vote Larry Krasner out if they think they want to. It's not. This isn't an impeachment.
Well, also, I was going to say is, do you think there's a message? I know he's a reform guy, no question. And you're talking to somebody who thinks that there needs to be some reform.
Not to that extreme.
The message is there are three crackpot Republicans in Harrisburg who want to get in the news and drum up this thing and get a little bit of media. Attention.
Right.
It's he's doing what he thinks is right, and he's doing what he thinks he was elected to do. And apparently, in the last election, most of the voters agreed with him. So whether anybody disagrees with him, at the end of the day, it's November 2nd or that first Tuesday in November, and that's when decisions are made.
By the way, that's what my father used to say to, when he was at his union. He would go like this. You'd always, when you're in a union, listen, it's a democratic process.
Your dad was a great man. So
I appreciate, thank you.
If I say anything close to him.
I appreciate it. So he would go like this. He would get some guy standing up, and he would be talking about the health and welfare. And of course, my father's a labor leader. He wants to give the members the best opportunity possible, sure. Right? But you always get somebody, and sometimes they may be right, whatever. And my father would explain it and explain it. And finally, he goes, I guess, tell you what, the election's on this particular date. If you don't like it, get on the ballot and run. You know what I mean? And you got a great point, Michael. I was just saying with Krasner, some people are saying that the criminals are no longer afraid because, that they're much more likely to get a lenient situation. And so if you talk to McNesby, and of course, they're not on the same page. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But my point is, in a city where crime is so high, the liberal approach to some is nerve-wracking.
One comment on that idea that the criminals are out there thinking, some kind of ramifications of political philosophy or, some social, they're out there doing what they do.
Whoever's
prosecuting, I really don't think that the deterrent effect of punishment has proved to be all of that effective, first of all. But secondly, the problem that exists right now is that the quality of life laws are not being charged, or if they're being charged, not prosecuted. And that's given people a lot of angst, and for good reason. But the deeper problem is that to accomplish what the progressive criminal justice social movement wants to accomplish, you need a vast underpinning of resources. You need an infrastructure of job training, rehabilitation, this restorative justice approach. Well, you actually need people who are trained and counseled and be able to go through the exercise of restorative justice, that meeting with participants. You need consistent people with follow-through. And that costs enormous sums of money that nobody is voting to spend.
There were 1,000.
Just putting people back out on the streets, not the answer.
Yeah, so you've got this academic experiment going on without the practical underpinnings to make it succeed. It's a problem. Yeah. It's almost
Mike's absolutely right.
It's almost doomed to fail.
Well, they talked. So right now in America, defund the police is not a prevalent anymore. And in fact, in Philadelphia, we're 1,000 police down. Number one. And number
Nobody
two.
Nobody wants to be a cop anymore.
No.
It is the most thankless freaking job.
Sure is.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is.
And the other thing is this. 9/11 operators also down on that. Very stressful job. Now, we've done a lot of union stuff on that. But, but reform. And I said it to John McNesby. I said, what do you think about some reform? And his answer was, I'm always open to listening to everything. They're trying to get this thing right. And,
You know what else they're way down on? Prison guards, prison staff. And can I tell you, it's criminal. There are people that are in danger in prison. There are people that are getting hurt in there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm seeing a lot of work injuries, an increase in work injuries for prison guards for that very reason.
Because they're
overworked. They're doing things that they weren't trained to.
And they're undermanned.
And the inmates. So let me say this loud and clear. If you are a prison guard that has been injured by working, call Sonny Banks. There's a reason why you're injured, because you're understaffed and you're doing more than you should be doing. Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
If you or a loved one has been hurt in prison, while in prison, either by another prisoner or by getting hurt by something in the prison, call Vanderveen, Hartshorn, and Levin. We can help you. We can show that there is a lack of employees, a lack of policy and procedure that leads to these injuries that are totally avoidable and that you deserve just compensation for.
Sure.
One more question.
I think there's a lot of people that don't realize that that's a cause of action.
What happens, Sonny?
It's a big cause of action.
If somebody gets hurt and they're in work at a prison and it's a third-party case, who do you call? You call banks, and who do you call?
I send that third-party work to Mike Vanderveen.
Oh, my God.
You're going to do more of that, Sonny.
That's what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Oh, and having said that, it's a discussion that the whole thing is incredibly complicated.
Well, as Mike said, I mean, the voters are going to make the necessary change. Isn't that what they did recently in San Francisco?
Yeah, sure did. Exactly.
Yeah. So.
So let's
good point.
Let's talk about that was a good discussion. It's happening. You guys are always on the front lines of anything going on in the city. But having said that, let's switch to some high profile cases. Anybody have any lately?
For the listeners, we're all looking at Mike.
Yeah. I did get on the front page of the Daily News a couple times.
You know, I was thinking about you. I did see that many times, and you guys do the injury at the high profile injury cases, but also
we're trial lawyers. We're trial lawyers, and I didn't, I disagreed with the verdict in that case, but. Man, we worked freaking hard on that. That thing was so well prepared. My staff, there were four lawyers in this office, three paralegals, Adam, our law clerk, who's going to be a lawyer in another year or so, brought in another law firm, Bill Brennan, Skip Ficino was instrumental and really ended up stepping up and playing a much larger role than anybody anticipated him doing, did a fantastic job. And I don't think that courthouse has seen a defense like that, very often.
Is it a tough landscape for police?
It's a really tough landscape for police, and it's a tough landscape today in a sex crimes case. Observing the presumption of innocence, observing the right to remain silent, and observing what is. Beyond a reasonable doubt. Those standards are getting whittled away by, public trials and other things
did
of that nature.
Did you get a lot of heat for taking that case?
Yeah, I did.
I'm sure.
Yeah, a lot of heat for taking that case. And it felt like the right case to do. I saw a lot of daylight there. I thought...
Mike, I think that's what makes your firm stand out because, trial lawyers represent people who need a defense, represent people who need, their rights protected, regardless of the circumstance. Yep. That's what we do. We try cases.
Yeah.
Yep. And you don't shy away from, and you believe in justice. I think, Sonny, we've obviously done many shows with Michael we've seen that, if you believe in something, you'll stand on your, laurels and you'll fight for it.
That guy needed a strong defense. He got a strong defense. I think there are a lot of strong appellate issues for him that we were able to lay out.
Great.
The biggest problem in that case where you had three seemingly very weak cases that were put together as one to each prop up the other one. And it was successful. There's a huge issue here. And it has to do with prior bad acts evidence. What's admissible in a criminal trial? There's a rule of exclusion that says prior bad acts shouldn't come in. In other words, if they say I robbed a bank and I stole from my sister when I was 12 years old, that's a bad act, but you can't admit it in my bank robbery case 10 mm-hmm. years later in Mississippi, prior bad acts evidence should be kept out except in very rare circumstances, such as it's like a fingerprint, right. Every time I rob that bank, I leave a handkerchief with MTV and a big heart around it.
Right.
And I take a 12-inch steak knife and I put it in
like the wet bandits
counter.
On right. Home Alone, yeah. Right?
Well, what's happening now, and particularly in sex assault cases, is if, you got Uncle Joe
has been a family friend for 20 years. And
can we go with another name?
And somebody makes an accusation against him that, you know, 10 years ago he did this or 20 years ago he did that. Those are very hard cases to defend in and of himself. But what you're seeing is this proliferation of other people. And I got to tell you, in my experience, the reliability of those claims 10 and 20 years later is very weak.
Sure.
It's really weak. And because it's so weak, prosecutors are bringing in other people who make similar 10 and 20 year old claims, often false. But also some vastly different. So this rule of exclusion has now become a rule of inclusion. And the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, I believe, is poised to make a decision that I hope puts it back to a rule of exclusion. And the case you bring has to stand up on its own. If you say I robbed that bank, prove it. Don't bring in my 12-year-old sister saying I took her piggy bank.
Right.
Right.
So it's that's a big case. We thought they were doing that with Cosby. But when they let Cosby out, they had all that 404B in them, and they ignored it and said, you can go out because Bruce Castor made a binding deal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm like, Bruce, what'd you do?
Probably, is there a difference, though? In two ways, Michael. Is there a difference... representing and being a part of a high profile case, number one, and number two, the difference between a multi-million dollar verdict in a civil case, which you've represented many times, and somebody's freedom in a criminal case on your behalf when you're representing them.
You know, kind of yes and no. It feels so much more. There's so much more pressure for me. When it's a criminal case, taking somebody's liberty is something I think that's far more valuable than monetary compensation. And unfortunately, that's all our system can give in civil courts, usually exercising injunctive relief. But man, it's a competition too. There's this competitive drive in me. I did a buddy in the court system asked me to represent his brother's girlfriend, fiance, for a dog bite case. Her dog was accused of biting another dog in Montgomery County. And man,
you didn't sleep the night before.
She said, my dog has an alibi. So I get photos of her and the dog at the park. I get an expert to say, without doubt, it was taken at this location at this time, so it couldn't have been her dog that did the biting. I won that. Remember that, Adam? I went up there. I had my guns ablazing at DJ court.
I mean, look at him. He's got just as much passion about a dog bite case as he does.
Oh, man, we won that slam down. But, boy, that girl was so, I mean, when I say you got paid peanuts, I got paid peanuts, but it was, I just like to compete.
What about when it's a high profile cases or anything that is, obviously.
I like the high profile cases. For me, you kind of get into a rhythm. Every case has a rhythm to it, a beat, a speed, a tempo.
You don't find that the media distracts you to some extent?
Does it impact the case?
Yeah.
I kind of shut the media out a little bit during it, but I do peek at the pictures every once in a while.
I saw that picture 100 times, and I'm going, and I was looking, and I'm going, I hope they mentioned which one.
Though when you defended Trump, it seemed like you were using the media to your advantage.
Well, and when I had Trump, we really used the media, and that was a really organic and kind of natural
It was savvy on your part, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, in this last case, as much as we could within the bounds of the rules, we used the media as well because, before I took on that Nordo case, he was already in the paper three or four times. They were already hammering him for stuff before they indicted him. So when that comes on, they'd run this whole story of a whole bunch
of
prior bad acts of his.
Character assassins.
That were never one admissible, never part of the case, never charged, never anything, but he got buried in the media. So I actually, in that case, hired a media consultant. and to deal with and try to soften the media's approach to the case and not convicting them in the press. But we work to say, hey, look, these, you know, we can't tell you a lot because it's grand jury, but, you know, these are, we're going after credibility. You got to look at you know, what these people are doing.
So a media consultant acts as your press secretary?
To a certain extent, yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. We talk about we talk about things that, first of all, we're legally and ethically allowed to say. Mm-hmm. He's a JD. Wayne Pollack is the guy's name. Georgetown Law, big firm, went out and now has his own media and a kind of crisis management team. And so he tells us ethically and legally what we can do, so we're, you know, in check.
Sure.
And then we talk about, you know, the messaging. You know, let's look at the messaging as it is now and really what is the story and what's the message that we want to get at.
Right.
How do we want to balance this? And then who do we balance it with? You know, he knows enough that this, you know, hopefully this reporter will do this, this TV anchor will do that, this show will do this. And, you know, you work your way to get it out.
Well, Joe, a lot goes into these high-profile cases.
An awful lot, yeah. I mean, the first mistake is, you know, legally and ethically, what are you allowed to do? It's the biggest mistake, you know, that I think lawyers make when they're doing this. So, you know, would I like to say a lot more? Sure, but, you know, there's only so much that you can say. We didn't have that in Trump. I mean, you know, that all happened so fast that, you know, we were flying without a kite. I guess I brought Wayne in, but that was more in the aftermath of it all.
Is it true that Adam really runs the show here? It's just a simple question.
Adam really runs the show. You know, he sits at the left hand. So.
Adam, did you ever hear of Inspector Gadget? You know what that means? See, everybody else is doing it, but really you're pulling the strength.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I find it amazing, Michael, because you've done, and it, you know, it's, when I saw you on the front page, I'm like, that makes sense, yeah. Right? In other words, you know, you're, and I guess the more you're on the front page, the more you get sought out.
Right. And so I don't know how much time we have left, but I need to ask the $1 million
please
question.
Go ahead.
What's next in your high profile line
of
cases?
Well, we have the Ability case. We have an 8-year-old girl who was shot in a round of 28 bullets for the in Delaware County.
Oh, yeah.
Last summer. We're coming up in August on the 1-year anniversary. We filed suit. It got stayed in federal court. And that's a really big case. We got a different media team on that. It's been a very tricky case, you know, tragic to all get out, but there are a lot of very intricate issues that have to be worked out.
And you're suing Delaware County
Delaware
Police?
County, the police department, the township and the county and the individual officers as well.
Right.
But, you know, they, you know, it's a Friday night football game coming out and in a, working class black and brown community in Delaware County, Sharon Hills, and, you know, just about dark. And they just unloaded in the crowd.
Right.
And they were really shooting at a moving car, which you're never, never, never allowed to do. But with total disregard for what was behind him. And I'm not saying that these officers were bad, but the culture in that town, the culture in that county, has created such an racial imbalance in treatment in, tax dollars going into one community and tax dollars going into another community. You know, one police force is really well trained
right. And
has a ton of officers, excuse me. And you got other ones like this poor community that had part-time officers and rookie officers and didn't have all the best of the training that you could get, and that culture pervaded even after the Ability child was.
That's why those high-profile cases are so interesting, because there's a lot of subplots.
But even after she was killed, you know, they're in Delaware County, right next neighboring town, you get the fire department talking about her and her death and her name and laughing and that kind of shit.
Yeah.
These four officers go to a preliminary hearing, and there are more blue officers in uniform than I've ever seen showing up countywide, all in support of these three guys who unloaded around 25 people into a moving car with two girls in it who had nothing more deadly in there than freaking lip gloss, all right? And so so then they make fun of them, and then they show up at the court, and it's a continuing cultural problem that they have in Delaware County and in these areas, and this case is going to change that. So that's good, what's good. Next. It's a big case. It's a high profile case. We're putting a lot into it, we want to change some things.
And am I correct? The officers did get fired.
The officers did get fired.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean. Yeah. You know, it's amazing.
Guess what?
What?
That's passing the buck.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's passing the buck. So.
Yeah. Well, the range of cases is unbelievable.
It is.
You know,
really
they is. Didn't.
But, and your passion, Michael, just want to say this, you know, and you know, how you look, and I in a sense, look at, you know, when the first thing you said today was about the common sense when we were talking about, and you take a that approach with every case. You have such a diverse group of cases and clients.
We do a lot of different stuff.
I mean, you do, and you know, it's impressive, man.
It really is. You know, very impressive. Yep.
And so we got a couple minutes left, you know, we've talked about you know, obviously there's a lot going on, and I'm really appreciative of the conversation. I want to remind listeners, you know, the wide array of once again the wide array of cases that, and types of personal injury and criminal that the firm does, and of course with Banks Law also.
Sure. Joe, let me put it to you this way: if there's something important going on in your life, call my law firm. Call me. Call Vanderveen, Hartshorn and Levin, mtvlaw.com, 546-1000. Mike Vanderveen, call us, because we're going to be able to help you. And if you're, and if it doesn't have to be litigation, it could be an area where a lawyer is needed, something important in your life. And if we don't do it, we're going to find you the right person to do it. We don't do workers' comp, but we're going to get you Sonny Banks. We don't do trusts and high fluting estates, but we'll get you the people that do. And so come to us for the things that are most important to you in your life.
And you know what's interesting? The last show we did was an immigration show, and it was
sure.
And you know, so we've had, you know, such an incredible.
Yeah, and I feel the same way that Mike does. I mean, we both have you know, an extensive referral network. So if you have a legal issue that we can't handle, we'll make sure we get you to the right attorney who can.
Yeah.
All right,
and there's really, you know, and the folks should know this. There's really a team of good lawyers out there that know each other,
absolutely,
and they know that they all play on the same level, and they all have the same drive and will to win, and experience that the listeners need.
How do you keep that? And how do you both? You've been doing it successfully for such a long time, and you know, right now, I mean, you know, you're both your firms always evolving. How do you keep, and we had this question last time, how do you keep that passion, Mike and Sonny? I mean, every day you could sit there and go, I got a lot of kids and they go to college and I got to pay. I'm just being honest though. Like,
me, I think each person has a unique issue, you know, that needs to be addressed. So I think it's, you know, that newness that I see with each client that gives me the passion to make sure that I get them what they're looking for.
You know, helping other people, representing people, counseling people is food for me. If I, you know, it makes me feel good. I help somebody, I feel big. I feel, you know, I feel.
It's not a better feeling.
It puts me in a state of grace that I can really give and help somebody out. So in a lot of ways, it's just a selfish, not in an ego way, just in a inner peace and sense of you're doing
it, it
what's
almost
right.
has a little taste of religion to it. I mean,
I don't disagree.
But I mean, I see leadership here, right? And Adam and Drew. I mean, you know, I the one thing, you know, when you come in here, you know, you, you just feel like, okay, this is a fresh, I mean, and we're just beginning, and having that leadership. I mean, everybody, you know, the one thing I hear, you know, obviously about both you guys is, and about the firm and everything, you know, at the top and successful firms, it all starts at the top and having that vision. Like, you guys ain't throwing the towel in anytime soon. And to me, it looks like it's because you love what you do. I mean, where you are right...
That's the trial lawyer's religion, helping people. Yeah. I mean, that's
but where you are right now, when you were going to law school, when you were in the seats that those guys are, is this and really, I mean, at the forefront of your professions. Like, there's a lot of lawyers in this world, and you guys were at the forefront of what you guys do.
I always knew that I wanted my own firm. I wanted to do it my way, not because my way is necessarily the right way, but I wanted to establish that culture and that passion in the people that I work around, that I work with.
Same thing.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. You know, I think, you know, I didn't want people to be hurdles in front of me. You know, I wanted to do my own thing, be responsible for my own, roll my own dice.
Yeah.
You know, can't do it my way.
can't end it any better than that. Michael, closing words?
Listen, Sonny Banks has been a tremendous guest today, and you heard him on the air, but he's an even better lawyer. It's such a great firm to go to. It's such a great firm to be represented by, and I hope you call him. What's the website, Sonny?
It's www.bankslaw.com.
Bankslaw.com.
And your contact information here?
mtvlaw.com.
All right, Sonny, any more
I want to thank Mike for inviting me to the program. It was a lot of fun, and I always appreciate our discussions.
Yeah, all right, good. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Vanderveen & Company show, sponsored by Vanderveen Hartstrom and the Vin, not Vanderveen and Associates. Your partner's going to kill me for that. I want to thank Adam for taking the pictures. I want to thank Drew and Erica for making it happen, and of course Sonny for being a fantastic guest. We ought to do more radio, you and I. And of course I want to thank Michael for being a gracious host and doing a great job. And so on behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.